Can't you see it? A glistening 100-megawatt solar field begging to be built? It's photovoltaic modules and balance of system powering a renewable energy tomorrow that's squeaky clean? We know that unless you have the right supplier, that world might just be a fantasy. But here at Graybar, with years of renewables experience, we live in that world. Get in touch to see for yourself.
We are now ready to depart.
Book your visit at graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
Whether you want to
buy, buy, buy.
In a bear market or
sell, sell, sell
in a bull market, Jim Cramer can help you become a better investor. Mad Money, weeknights 6 Eastern. Listen to CNBC on the Odyssey app.
Zen Sports just picked another grand prize winner, this time for the big December big game sweepstakes. And now they're rolling out the new VIP Players Club sweepstakes for January, and the prizes are raised to a whole new level. This month, one grand prize winner will win a $10,000 bonus bet on the NFL big game in February and $10,000 cash, or you can have an alternative prize of $15,000 cash. You have the ability to earn entries on every bet you place in January and every dollar you wager. Plus, earn 10 times the entries on parlay bets. It doesn't get much better than this. And if you don't win the grand prize, don't worry. You'll still have a shot to win one of five small prizes, which grant you either a $1,000 bonus bet on NFL big game on the NFL big game or $250 cash. Also, for all new customers who sign up using code JEFFTN, J-E-F-F-T-N, you'll receive 500 additional entries to the contest for the value of the qualifying bet. So what are you waiting for? Head on over to zensports.com/sweepstakes for a full list of rules, and you can also earn a $100 danger, or I should say a $100 no danger first wager on your first bet. Zen Sports, betting just got better. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-889-9789. No danger first wager, limited to plus 500 odds to qualify. Terms and conditions do apply. A qualifying wager for a wager entry must have a minimum odds of any leg in the entry of at least minus 250 odds or worse. For clarification, a minus 251 odds play does not qualify. Qualifying wager must be made for a minimum amount of $5. Head over to zensports.com/sweepstakes for contest terms and conditions. Must be 21 or older and in Tennessee to bet. Jason Smith coming up next. Before we do that, let's get in the list. The Orange Bowl. All right, Cobb, we haven't really talked a ton about it because we got into the Grizzlies mostly during hour number one. But I do think it's interesting because when ESPN first revealed the calendar, when they were like revealing the monthly calendar of their big time programming, and you look to January, this weekend was one that caught my eye. Thursday night, playoff game, college football playoff game. Friday night, college football playoff game. Saturday, super wild card weekend begins. Two playoff games on Saturday, three playoff games on Sunday, and then the Monday night game also on ESPN. Tonight, it all starts with Notre Dame and Penn State. Couple of interesting notes, because we'll get into like what we think about the possibility of this becoming like maybe an appointment weekend. Like, this is just a weekend where we know, like, hey, we are make room on the couch. Like, y'all, this is just where we're camping out here on the couch. But we've had some reports that we have the flu going through Notre Dame's locker room. To what degree seems to be the question. It doesn't seem to be that there's a denial that there are some at least flu-like symptoms going through the Notre Dame locker room. I guess this is the first question I have. How much stock are you putting into the flu leaks?
The fact that Notre Dame is acknowledging it so forthrightly seems to suggest to me that, oh, there's nothing to see here. And maybe there's not. Like, I don't think, from what I understand, it's reserves and it's special teams players. But let's not hide from the fact that Notre Dame is already a little bit banged up here.
Yep.
Like, their best interior defender is out for the playoff. They lost their stud corner, Benjamin Morrison, early on this season. So, like, that defense doesn't have a ton of depth. So now, if some of your depth has the flu, if you get another couple of starters banged up, it could become an issue. I don't think it's necessarily a big issue going into the game if you're trying to evaluate whether or not to let it influence your bet or something. But if in the second half Notre Dame has three or four guys that have gone down with injury, then I think it could be a factor.
Well, if you want to talk real gambling brain, I mean, my first thought is anytime I see this news is, oh, they're leaking this. They're leaking this to get Penn State overconfident. And they're also doing some storytelling. It could be the Notre Dame flu game. Like, you know.
Right.
Like, I mean, like, in the end, do I really believe Jordan had the flu? No, I think he was hungover.
Like, I'll tell you what I'm... Yeah. Well, I'm more worried about Abdul Carter for Penn State. He's
so
their stud defensive
think
end.
If we're really talking about what are the availability concerns that matter, I think that is the single biggest one, is what is the status of Abdul Carter?
Because you're talking about a top 10 NFL draft pick coming off the edge here for Penn State, 22 tackles for loss, just a sack machine, probably one of the absolute best edge rushers in college football this season. And he didn't hardly play at all against Boise State because he hurt his shoulder. And so they've been kind of like saying, yeah, we expect him to play, but now you're seeing conflicting reports today from his agent telling Pete Thamel that he might not play. And it's really a game time decision.
Rosie! So it's always nice to see, it's nice to see Rosenhaus getting in the college game, you know?
Of course. And isn't it interesting, Jeffrey, how when it comes to, and I know this has invaded the professional sports space a little bit in the last few years, but boy, these agents sure want a lot of credit in the college space. Like when one of their players commits, it's, quote, the agent and the agent's name tells 24/7 Sports or whatever. Like these guys, these college agents, boy, they want their names out there.
Yeah. I think here's how you, if you need to guess who the source is of a commitment or a transfer portal, whatnot, if you see a dollar figure included, the source is the agent.
Yeah, right.
Because the agent wants the name out there. But yeah, I blame Woj. I blame all them for becoming information brokers and including, like when I started seeing, the deal was orchestrated by agent of such agency. I was like, oh my God, this is now what we're reading in news stories. I think though you're spot on, because the other thing that I kept laughing is he obviously played in the first half and then everyone's like, oh, Boise got back in it. I was like, nah, Abdul Carter got hurt. Like that game flipped. All of a sudden Boise could move it at least a little bit. And then also, I thought Penn State's play calling was a little curious. Although, I will always go to the grave in this era. We judge the result. Like when we think a team should be, running the ball and they wind up throwing it, I never know whether or not to actually blame play calling, because almost everything at this point is an RPO. So what it can simply be is the defense is sitting there going, if I'm Boise State, aren't you sitting there going, we can't let them run it down our throats? Like, let's see if Drew Aller can beat us through the air. And maybe he can. But, like, the one thing is, like, I can't let them run it down our throats. So you give them a look that says, please don't run it.
Yeah. Well, the thing is, Drew Aller, he did beat Boise State through the air in the first half. He cooled off in the second half. But I think that's the difference in this game for me, is I do believe a little bit more in Penn State's vertical passing ability than I do in Notre Dame's. And I also look at the way Notre Dame beat Georgia, and I'm not going to call it a fluke, but there were some unrepeatable circumstances in that game with Georgia turning the football over in really horrible situations, Georgia giving up a 98-yard kickoff return for a touchdown. And you know, you look at Notre Dame and the way they won that game, it's like, can you repeat those things 2 weeks in a row against a quality team like Penn State? It's just hard for me to believe. And I've seen enough from Drew Aller here as of late, and I'm not saying Drew Aller is Josh Allen, but he is a lot better than he was last season, and I don't know that he's gotten the credit for the improvement that he's made.
He's better. I also don't know how much of it is Andy Kotelnicki, who is able to scheme stuff up. Like, this is what makes evaluating quarterbacks so difficult in this era. So much of the guys that have the big numbers, they usually play in well-schemed up offenses, and they're throwing to open guys. And so I tend to agree with you. It's like, if I break this game down, do I have more faith in Riley Leonard throwing the ball down the field to make a play, or do I have more faith in Drew Aller? I'm less high on Aller than everyone, but I still have more faith than Riley Leonard. And I don't want that to come across as a slight to Riley Leonard. Like, I think he's gotten better too. Like, I really do. Like, I think he's a better passer this year than he was last year. And I'm not trying to throw shade at Elko or anyone at the Duke staff. Like, I do think he's gotten better. I think the thing that I keep coming back to is I'm on Penn State here, but man, like, why is Notre Dame favored? Because I guess to your point about the Georgia game, I don't want to take any credit away from Notre Dame because they made plays. Like, in the end, when Georgia had that first possession and you're thinking, oh, they're about to take control of this game, they get the sideline penalty, but they made an awesome play to force the fumble. Like, they perfectly timed the blitz, but that takes points off the board. And so then Georgia makes the decision, very un-Kirby-like, we're going to try and go score, try and go get some points. And Gunnar Stockton, who does not have good pocket presence, whether it be maybe that's a skill he hasn't developed, maybe it's from a lack of playing, maybe it's also the fact that that left tackle has gotten beat like a stepchild all year.
Oh, God, I mean, that was a problem.
I don't know what the left tackle in the portal was, but I do know Georgia was going to get one. You know what I mean? That was very, because that guy, the Ole Miss game, like, you can make the argument he single-handedly lost that game. Like, he was so bad in that game. But I also said this earlier in the week. I've never seen a play like that kickoff return that I, in real time, felt like, that's game. Because the way that that game was playing out, like, you knew, as soon as somebody got up multiple scores, there was going to be the opportunity to just start playing the clock. And that's exactly what Notre Dame did. I felt like we spent more time arguing about whether or not Parker Smith, Preston Smith, Parker Stone, Preston Stone, I don't know. Am I mixing up SMU quarterbacks with Georgia sideline
Are you talking
guys?
About the walk-on kid?
I felt like we spent more time talking about that than the kickoff return, and the kickoff return was a significantly bigger play.
Yeah, right. I felt bad for that kid. They brought it up too later in the game when at that point it was clearly going to have no quantifiable outcome on how the game played out. Like, the margin was like 10 points or something.
It was presented that play was more significant than the kickoff, and that is patently not true.
I thought it was funny, though. Somebody tweeted out, like, I guess we'll find out who Parker Smith's daddy is by whether or not he's on the team next year.
Yeah, that's one of those ones where you better hope, like, your dad's heavily invested in the collective.
All right. I tried to look up the guy's, like, high school stats.
Do you have a huddle page?
He was like a reserve cornerback for, like, Savannah Country Christian or something.
That's checking out. Yeah,
the Facing the Giants school or something. So Notre Dame, Jeremiah Love, this is another injury issue to watch. Like, we think he's going to be good to go, but he's been banked up. So that's one thing that I have in my, like to watch during pregame warmups, sort of bag there. And then half of our discussion about how they beat Georgia was centered around the fact that, you know, Gunnar Stockton was that quarterback for Georgia. That was his first career start. And Drew Aller is, again, he's not Josh Allen. He's not a world beater, but he's a 2-year starter.
By the way, he's also, let's be real, he's two good performances away from definitely being the New York Giants quarterback.
Well, that's the thing. It's like, he may have preemptively declared for that he was returning to Penn State. Like, so he put out that messaging, right? Like, going into the playoff, like, hey, I'm going to be back, you know, and that's why Bo Perbula transferred, the backup quarterback, because he's like, well, Drew's coming back, I'm not going to play. And now Drew Aller, okay, look at this. Carson Beck is undeclaring for the draft now. Who knows? Quinn Ewers might go get in the portal too. So it's going to be like, all right, who's your QB number three Quinn in this draft class?
I think Quinn Ewers is definitely getting in the portal.
So, yeah, after Cam Ward, Shedeur Sanders, if you're in the market for a quarterback as an NFL franchise, like, where are you looking?
I hope that they're not, but I think at this point it is Jalen Milroe.
Yeah, exactly. So if you're an NFL scout,
and by the way, just spent the entire broadcast of his last game. Did I tell you I'm woke on this? So how much of the broadcast did you get to watch of the artist formerly known as the Outback Bowl?
Yeah, I didn't have the sound on. Okay. It was like, second screen. Yeah.
Osweiler was going full Gary Danielson. Like, you know how the Gary Danielson joke of, like, Gary would never miss a moment to identify a missed touchdown. Like, Gary would always say, if he just goes right here, this is a touchdown. Osweiler, the entire broadcast, was just going, I do not know what Jalen Milroe is looking at. He's like, this deep over route is open every single time. It's the same time. He keeps missing it. I want to be perfectly clear. Brock Osweiler's played a lot of football, and if he's sitting up in the booth and he can just see somebody's running free 15 yards across the middle of the field over and over, it's probably something he's going to make a note of.
Okay, not wrong.
I did find myself wondering, though, in the back of my mind, so much of what gets brought up in those meetings, particularly, like, Brock's doing a lot of West Coast games, so he's doing a lot of, like, it's not like Brock's just just absolutely calling every SEC game. So much of that comes from the production meetings, and I just kept wondering in the back of my mind, did DeBoer just light up Jalen Milroe and his inability to see the field?
That's keen. No, that's an excellent observation. You're probably right. It was probably Kalen DeBoer telling Osweiler in the meetings, hey, here's what to look out for. Here's what Milroe doesn't see. But, you know, that kind of is an interesting point, because I think there's going to be some NFL GMs or coaches or whatever who are egotistical enough to think that they are the ones who can fix Jalen Milroe. And because they're going to look at the physical tools, you know, just like how everybody over the last however many years has looked at Joe Milton and the physical tools and thought, wow, what a talented player.
1-0 in his NFL career.
Right. And it's all, and everybody's like, wow, you know, maybe he's a really good quarterback. And like those of us who have watched him play over multiple years are like, yeah, he's not.
Hang in there.
And so, but somebody's going to talk themselves into thinking they can fix Jalen Milroe. And if they can, boy, the potential payoff will be phenomenal, because he's so talented, he's so strong. But the problems are significant. And if Kalen DeBoer, who is probably the best quarterbacks coach in college football, can't do it, like, I think that should be a pretty clear warning sign to NFL franchises that, hey, maybe there's more problems here than the tape is showing.
So Jordan Reed, who's now the draft analyst over at ESPN, I think he does a really good job. So right now he has Cam at 1, Shador at 2, Milroe at 3. He had Beck at 4, but obviously Beck is now coming off the board. The news of the day, Carson Beck has entered the transfer portal. The strong suspicion is that he is heading to Miami. Now, there's also been other reporting, back to Cobb's point about agent speak. No, he's just keeping all options open.
Mm-hmm.
He's
listening to Texas Tech.
The classic is, he's done the brilliant thing. Number one, entering the portal, announcing Miami's the leader in the clubhouse, and then saying, but we'll take your best offers. Miami historically known to not lose many bidding wars. Get them as the market price, perhaps blow it up. The other names that you see are Dillon Gabriel at 5, Dart at 6, Curtis Rourke at 8, Max Bosmer of Minnesota is at 9, Tyler Gross. Shaw is at 10. This draft is horrible. And like, this
yeah,
is why
I put Drew Aller ahead of every person that you just mentioned on that list. So if he goes pro, he's the number 4 or 5 quarterback in the class.
I mean, if he goes pro, he might be 3.
Yeah, could be.
I mean, and honestly, you could talk me into, because of prototypical size and whatnot. Like, if he, again, I'm not expecting him to light up Notre Dame and Ohio State, but those are two unbelievably good defenses. If he lights them up, there are going to be people that sit there and go, well, he just lit up two of the best defenses in college football. Why are we not talking about it? Because, like, in the end, like, what pushed Stroud was in jeopardy during that season, if you remember, his junior year. Like, he was starting to fall, and he had the Georgia game. And everybody's like, well, that's QB2. Like, done. Moving on. And I think a big part of Penix was having the Texas game on his resume, because he was starting to slip, because he just had too much film out there, and then he did what he did to Texas. Everybody's like, all right, well, we're putting this guy back on the board. I think this is the other question I have about Notre Dame and Texas. Or, I'm sorry, Notre Dame and Penn State. Who's had the softer path?
Oh, it's got to be Notre Dame.
So, what do you think Notre Dame's had the softer path here?
Oh, you mean, okay, well, if you're counting, like, if you're narrowing it down to the playoff.
Yeah.
Then Penn State, I mean, come on now. They had to play SMU and Boise State. That is a joke. If you're going back to the regular season, I at least give Penn State credit for having to play Ohio State, playing a pretty good Illinois team, playing Indiana, which made the college football playoff. Regular season, Penn State had a tougher path. But college football playoff, I mean, you couldn't have drawn up an easier path for Penn State in the playoff.
And so this is what, in the back of my mind, like, because I'm pretty convinced, like, I think these two teams are the same thing, but I think Penn State has a little bit more, in the gas tank on offense. And so that makes me like Penn State. At the same time, I wonder, like, am I just falling for the trap? Like, in the end, Vegas still has Notre Dame favored. Now, they're not as big of a favorite as they once were, but they are still favored.
Well, I'll say this. If you lose this game and you're Penn State and you're James Franklin, is the still can't win the big one label still there? I think it is, because I don't think the Penn State fan base is going to give him credit for beating SMU and for beating Boise State. I think Marcus Freeman gets credit for beating Georgia last week.
Even though it was with a backup quarterback. Yeah.
Yes, has established his viability and sort of shed some of the questions within that fan base, especially when you look at how Brian Kelly continues to flounder at LSU. But if James Franklin loses tonight, those questions are still there.
From a content perspective, I think the best thing about the 12-team playoff is that, to me, it is solidified that James Franklin and Penn State are going to be married forever and in just a wildly unhappy marriage in which both parties want to be somewhere else, but there's nowhere else they can go.
Because, hey, it's the same for me. I'm in year 11 of my online dynasty, and I'm at Penn State, and I just keep waiting
You're in the James Franklin dilemma.
I am. It's tough. I'll say this, though. I think Penn State's going to win, but I would love to have Marcus Freeman as a national championship-winning college football coach. I love Freeman. I love Dan Lanning, and I love Kenny Dillingham. Like, you got these three coaches under 40 right now, all of whom were in the college football playoff. And my gosh, they have brought so much good energy to college football this season. Like, it is so refreshing to hear and see the way that Marcus Freeman and Lanning and Dillingham go about their business, because they're not dinosaurs being taught new tricks in the portal era who are begrudgingly getting dragged into modern college football. They're like rolling with the punches and setting the precedent, and they're reaping the benefits of it. And I think a lot of these programs would do well to bring in some of that young energy, because I see the future of the sport being like the sort of vibes that those guys are bringing right now. And it'd be great. It'd be great to see Freeman on that stage versus the kind of stale, you know, Ryan Day versus James Franklin sort of matchup, right? Like, you know, that doesn't really move the needle for me, but I think having Marcus Freeman on that stage would be nice.
I think, like, when I kind of go into the same question of, like, which fan base would feel better if in a loss, I think if you're Notre Dame, it's unquestionably Notre Dame, because I think in the back of your mind entering this year, you still kind of had some doubts of, like, all right, is Marcus Freeman Mr. Can get us to the next level, or at least get us to the level that Brian Kelly had? Well, now you see the answer to that is yes. Does that mean next year is going to be resoundingly great as well? It's like, no, like, what we've seen is there's probably going to be some volatility in this era. But what you do know at this point is Marcus Freeman can get you to the playoff, can win playoff games, and more importantly, Marcus Freeman is not Brian Kelly. And so, like, in the end, I think even if Notre Dame loses tonight, I think you view this season as massive success because you suppressed the Marcus Freeman doubts. It's way easier to root for Marcus Freeman than it is for Brian Kelly. And on top of that, Brian Kelly's doing kind of the same thing at LSU that, like, average LSU coach does.
Yeah, Notre Dame has won the breakup, and that's true whether or not they win tonight or lose tonight by four touchdowns. Notre Dame has won the breakup. Now we'll see. You know, look, hey, maybe by the end of next season that changes. Like, LSU is loading up in the portal. Brian Kelly knows he's got to win now.
Funny how those plans all of a sudden change when you know it's like, I better win next year.
Yeah, right. Well, nobody thought it was going to take him 4 years to get it going down there. And meanwhile, his successor at Notre Dame has had as much success as he ever had. So it's I love it. I love it when the scorned lover wins the breakup. And you're kind of seeing that play out at Kentucky on the hoop side right now. I mean, I know they just lost to Georgia, but I mean, Kentucky is running circles around Arkansas on the hardwood right now.
That game last night surprised me. And I don't even want to make this like an Ole Miss thing. I thought the teams that were going to, like, I kind of viewed Ole Miss as like the super well-coached, good private school. Like the private school that can also get good athletes, but they're like well-coached, but if you put length and athleticism against them, they're not going to have that much success.
So you were envisioning like a 2009 MUS versus Hamilton High School
like
basketball game. Yeah. Okay.
Like that kind of thing. Like, we're like, I mean, honestly, it was like my senior year, we won the state title, that 07, like, where we had like Farrakhan Hall as a freshman was playing, but largely it was Elliot Cole, 5'11, 145 pound white guy that could just absolutely, once he crossed half court, he was wet. In the state championship game, it was like Elliot 29, St. George's 27, and they had Elliot Williams. Like,
Yeah, they had Elliott Williams and Lawrence Bowers.
Correct. They had both of them on the floor, and the best Elliott on the floor was Elliott Cole. So, like, that was kind of what I'm envisioning. But it is interesting to watch this Arkansas thing because I'm not, like, willing to write it off. I thought they would be more talented than this. Their talent
ain't the problem. The talent
doesn't jump off. Like, there were plenty of Kentucky teams where you're like, they should be better. I don't feel the same way when I'm watching Arkansas right now.
Yeah, they're plenty talented. I get it. They're not.
Maybe that also speaks to the talent level of the rest of the league.
Where Yeah, they've got players. I think they're underwhelming a little bit. The fact that Adu Thiero is their best player, that's majorly concerning. I mean, he was just kind of a role player for Cal at Kentucky, and now all of a sudden, I mean, to his credit, he's developed. He's gotten a lot better, but I don't think anybody going into the season was like, yeah, Adu Thiero is going to be your all-SEC guy from that Arkansas roster. So that's a problem. But the offense is just horrendous. It's just a bunch of aimless dribbling, contested step-back jumpers. It's just the same garbage that we watched at Kentucky for the last 3 or 4 seasons, except it's kind of worse because they're a lot worse of a shooting team than they were last season.
Well, they don't have Reed.
When they had, you know, yeah, they had Reed Sheppard and Robert Dillingham. They don't have either of those, you know, types of outside shooters this year. And then
what surprised me though is like last night they needed to get stops and they couldn't do it. That's like, I'm used to seeing Kentucky lose games, but like when it came time to getting stops, they could at least get stops. Like, Ole Miss kind of pulled away.
They did, and then when they cut it to 6, Jonell Davis had that
dumb
ticky-tack foul with, like, 4 seconds on the shot clock. I mean, he knew it. He's been the most disappointing piece of the puzzle.
Well, then remember he called the random timeout? Like he called a timeout, and Cal's like, what happened? And yeah, like the official came up to him was like, your player called timeout. He had this look of like, what?
Oh, with like 6 minutes and 30 seconds.
Yeah, like, it was like,
super
yeah.
random. Yeah. 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 That was super random. He was my number one ranked transfer. So this was partly just sour grapes for me because it was a misevaluation. But my man was the co-AAC player of the year. He had led Florida Atlantic to a Final Four. He was a walking bucket and one of the most efficient scorers outside of a power conference. And usually those guys are near 100% hit rate. I mean, he's like, you know, it's like projecting Kendrick Davis as the number one transfer, except that Jonell Davis is 4 inches taller and has actually, you know, been on a deep NCAA tournament run. I thought it was a can't-miss evaluation. And he's gone to Arkansas, and he was a little banged up early in the preseason and stuff. But he to me has been the most disappointing piece for Arkansas because you know they had to pay a lot of money. A lot of that NIL budget on that team is going to pay Jonell Davis. And
you know, Michigan was very much open to the idea of taking him as well.
Yeah, and then meanwhile, Michigan is making it work right now pretty well without him. So I think that's. The issue that I see with Arkansas above and beyond anything else is just the fact that he's not giving them what I think they thought they were going to get.
I'm still, and maybe this is, I don't have the Cal hating gene quite as much as everyone else. I'm still open to the idea that they start, like, that they figure it out in February. And what we've also seen in this league is, like, all right, starting out 0-2 is not going to be great. It ain't going to kill you.
You're going to get into the NCAA tournament this year from the SEC if you have 7 conference victories. That's my line. If you go 6-12 in the league, I don't think it's happening, nor do I think it should.
I think you have to have the right resume, but I'm with you. I think there could be 7-win SEC teams in the tournament.
And there might be 2.
Yeah.
You know, there could be a couple of 7-11 teams because almost without exception, South Carolina, Missouri maybe being the question marks, maybe LSU. I think 13 out of the 16 teams in the league have non-conference resumes that are good enough to more or less guarantee them the NCAA tournament appearance at 7-11. Of course, you got to have at least 1 or 2wins in that bunch.
It's like you can't just make the blanket statement, a 7-win team's getting in. Like, I'm not sure if Oklahoma wins 7 games given their resume. Like, I don't know if they get in, but like I'm with you. There could be a 7-win team. All right, we got to take a break. When we come back, let's talk with Jason Smith. We'll do that next right here on Jeff Wright and Company, 92.9 FM, ESPN. Jason Smith is the co-host of the Jason John Show weekdays right here on 92.9 FM ESPN. Follow him on Twitter on X at Jason Smith 929. Jason, how seriously are you taking Penny's comments from his Monday radio show that he is looking to expand the rotation?
couple ways to look at this, and we know Penny's history and how he's had a tendency to overindulge when it comes to playing.
That's a great
guys.
Way, yeah. He overeats.
But they're listen, you know, it's really six guys, and it has been for the majority of the season. And we were saying it while it was happening, while we love, hey, this shorter rotation, roles defined, this looks easy and simple. The fact is you're putting a ton on the backs of Tyrese, Hunter, P.J. Haggerty, just in terms of minutes. You know, these guys, in some cases, there's a game Haggerty goes 40, full 40 minutes. And so, and we knew that, you know, with those guys in particular, haven't been dinged up, and Colby Rogers logging big minutes too, that entire six is that, you know, they had missed practices. And so, you know, you needed at some point, and we had seen it against Arkansas State. We also saw it against Mississippi State, where Penny needs a Baraka Okoji or a P.J. Carter to step up in a way and take some minutes off those guys, be able to spell those guys for a little bit, and it backfires on you. It certainly did there early against Arkansas State and again against Mississippi State. They need to get some of their rotation more involved, if not for nothing else, to balance the load out a little bit more, to make sure you're preserving P.J. and Tyrese and Colby for when it really matters the most, which is, you know, the AAC tournament and then the NCAA tournament. So while that's important, and Penny talked about that, but he talked even more about, you know, I want to do it to turn up the pressure, because for me to employ my system defensively, I got to be able to get after you. If I'm only playing six guys and hell, I'm dependent on them offensively, I need more defensively if I want to, you know, get on teams the way I want to. So Jeffrey, it seems like you're trying to, you know, sort of thread that needle here in terms of finding the right balance. He does need to find guys in that rotation. Perhaps Harris, the addition from Devin. I've already forgotten his name. I think my guy from Virginia. Dante Harris. Yes, Dante. I don't know why I want to call him Devin Harris. Dante Harris.
I think
Devin
was an NBA guy, right?
That's what it was. Yeah. Perhaps Dante Harris is a guy that, again, can help you in that role. But, Jeffrey, I was listening to you on this earlier this week. I'm in the same camp. Work those guys in, but do it later on. Don't do it by the 17-minute mark. Go ahead and put these games away, hopefully, against much lesser competition in the AAC, and then get Tyrese and PJ and those guys off the floor and get them some rest. I think there's a right way, there's a proper lane here where you get a little bit of both, and it works out well for the Tigers. So I'm not overly concerned, but anytime you're talking about Penny extending the rotation, you certainly have to have your antenna up.
All right, Jason, KenPom gives the Tigers a 12.2% chance, which I feel like is a pretty good number, of running the table and going unbeaten in AAC play. How long until you are ready to have that conversation, like, realistically? It's too early now, but, like, what do you need to see from the Tigers over these next couple of weeks to get to a point where you even think that's a possibility?
Well, health, number one, just because, again, while you're hoping to link this rotation a little bit, you're still so dependent on that top six. So you can have a Caleb Mills-type situation last year, which you did in the first game of conference play, I believe it was, against Tulsa, where you lost a key part. And that, you know, that helped in terms of the way things came unraveled. That's part of it. Cobb, this AAC is as worse as it's as bad as it's ever been. And if you look through that KenPom I did yesterday, I don't think he's got any team in the AAC within 8 points of the Tigers the rest of the way. That's having played North Texas and knocked out, at least according to KenPom, you know, the second highest rated team in your league, next to you, obviously. And so we're talking pot, you know, what should be a 18 game slate of hopefully a lot of blowouts, a lot of lopsided wins. That's what frankly what the net requires. And it's another reason to go back to Jeffrey's point. I don't think you want to play too much with trying to play, you know, you're trying to get 8, 9, 10 guys out there, because, again, clobbering these bad AAC teams is the only way you're going to be able to offset not having the type of quad one and quad two opportunities that other teams are going to have in the power conferences. You're going to need your net to stay high, and the way you do that is by clobbering these teams. I'm telling you, even at KenPom, when you're playing these ECUs and some of these even lower-ranked teams, they're going to drop, if they're not hammering them, they're going to drop just because of that lower KenPom ranking, that awful KenPom ranking of the other team. And net will apply as well, sort of the same way, unless you're thumping them. And so there's every motivation, man, to go through this league and absolutely, you know, not just get through it, but to absolutely handle it. And Cobb, if, you know, I guess to answer your question, if you get to some point where you're, you know, 10-0, 11-0, I think we can start talking about it, especially with as bad as this league is. But let me see UAB, as bad as they are or as bad as they have been compared to preseason expectations, let me see Tulane. Ron Hunter has been a thorn. side the last two or three years hasn't really mattered what Tulane's done the rest of the year, which for the most part has been nothing, but they have given Memphis trouble. Let me see those two first and feel good about that before we start talking about 18 and O's.
All right, let's switch gears a little bit. Let's talk some Grizzlies. Are you on my train of thinking that when we keep seeking, like, who is this group of Grizzlies? Who's going to be one of these teams that emerges? I really do think Houston has the makings of potentially being a team that we haven't thought about. But when you add in the Dylan factor, yeah. I don't even necessarily like include Steven. Like, to me, like, that's another thing. But it's the fact that they're definitely a, like, they're a team that's, like, they've instigated stuff. And, like, that's kind of what makes people blood boil. And you add the Dylan factor, like, and they're kind of, like, on a similar age trajectory. Like, they're a little bit younger. Like, I can just see where this ends up being. They're a division opponent. Like, this ends up being one of those teams that, like, again, there's a lot of basketball to be played. But there's a situation where these two teams meet in the conference semifinals as the 2 and 3 seeds. And, like, to me, like, that would really get this thing rolling.
Well, for that's it. I think first things first, I was listening to you guys about rivalries. You're right, the ones we thought would be rivalries.
Yep.
Like I think it was Cobb that said the Pelicans, and we did at one point sort of thing.
Yep.
You don't get there unless you have, and you guys talked about the storied ones with Memphis, you know, the Clippers, those guys. You got to have playoff series. And so until it's happening there, you know, even we were talking ourselves into Minnesota there for a while, albeit before the Gobert trade when you knocked them off in the playoffs. But we're talking about them sort of being a rivalry going forward. You don't have a real rivalry until it really matters, until teams are being put out, and then there's some, you know, there's some real venom for the other squad. Now, back to your point, I do think the potential's there, man. I mean, just look at the way the teams play, first of all. You got the Dylan Brooks factor. He's always going to try to get under your skin. The Grizzlies know him like the back of their hand. But also, you're talking about the top two rebounding teams in the league, and I think two of the top five, Houston's 3, Memphis's 5, in terms of defense. I mean, so it's in many ways it's a similar style in terms of how rugged you want to be, in terms of what you're trying to, what you've established. And Ime, amazingly, has already done it. I just think it's happened so much more quickly than I thought it could. A defensive culture that's real, and Houston with all those young guys and Dylan Brooks certainly as the veteran sort of helping lead the way on that side. You know, they've established a defensive edge that you don't typically see from young teams. So because of the way they play, Jeffrey, I think it lends itself to just the fact that you've got two young teams here that want to show, hey, you know, we're the one that can put OKC down, you know, that you've got that factor too. So I think there's a lot of potential there. You've got all the right ingredients to have a great rivalry, but it'll need to happen for it to be firmly established, like you said, and be more than us just kind of hoping that it happens or comes to fruition. You need it has to be established in the playoffs. And again, that could still happen with Dallas if you get playoff meetings. It could still happen with Minnesota. But I think specifically that Houston team, particularly because of the way it plays, Jeffrey, we would be nose to nose. I have,
yes.
Especially with a guy like Dylan Brooks and those Houston Rockets, those young players following his lead. And they got some dudes, man. Thompson is good. They've got some young guys that are willing to scrap now. It's not smoke and mirrors whatsoever, or a pig with lipstick on. Ime's got that thing turned in the right direction and much quicker than I ever thought it could happen. So I absolutely think it could be a rivalry. Hopefully we could see a matchup like that in the playoffs. Great.
When Tyler Hero got in that scrap, he's never been more relatable. When he's just kind of like walking back, he's like, oh, my guy's got it. Like, they got my back.
Exactly right.
Jason,
I hope we get it, brother.
I do too. We appreciate my man.
Take care.
Jason Smith of the Jason and John Show. I want to remind you that in January, presents another great opportunity to make some money with Zen Sports. While they just picked another grand prize winner, this time for the big game in December sweepstakes, now they're rolling out the VIP Players Club sweepstakes for January, and the prizes are raised to a whole new level. This month, one grand prize winner will win a $10,000 bonus bet on the NFL big game in February and $10,000 cash, or an alternative prize of $15,000 cash. You have the ability to earn entries on every bet you place in January and every dollar you wager. Plus, you can earn 10 times the entries on all parlay bets. It doesn't get much better than this. And if you don't win the grand prize, don't worry. You'll also have a shot to win one of 5 small prizes, which grant you either a $1,000 bonus bet on the NFL big game or $250 cash. Also, for all new customers who sign up using my promo code JeffTN, JeffTN, you'll receive 500 entries in addition to the entries earned from the value of the qualifying bet. So what are you waiting for? Head on over to zensports.com/sweepstakes for a full list of rules, and you can also earn a $100 no-danger first wager on your first bet. Zen Sports, betting just got better. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-889-9789. No danger first wager limited to plus 500 odds. To qualify, terms and conditions do apply. A qualifying wager for a wager entry must have a minimum odds for any leg in the entry of at least minus 250 or worse American odds. For clarity, a wager at minus 251 does not qualify. A qualifying wager for a wager entry must be a minimum of $5. Head over to zensports.com/sweepstakes for full terms and conditions. You must be 21 or older and in Tennessee to bet. When we come back, we tell your story next right here on Jeffrey Wright and Company, 92.9 FM, ESPN. All right, Cobb, for today's Tell Your Story, we go to Mr. Taylor Swift, I guess. Travis Kelce, when his brother brought up the notion that the Chiefs laid down and let the Broncos beat them so that the Bengals would not get into the playoffs, which totally happened, Kelce had this to say: "I ain't scared of effing nobody. I wanted them in the effing playoffs. I wanted to slay every dragon one by one, like Mortal Kombat. I'd even want this to be like we play the lowest seed. Just give me the best teams." That is such a perfect tell your story, because there's nothing he can do about it. Like, in the end, the team did lay down. Oh, all of a sudden the Bengals aren't in it. By the way, we'd love to play the highest ranked team, but dang it, the NFL playoffs are designed to where we get to play the lowest remaining seed in every round. Darn. I wanted it to be the other way.
This almost makes me want, almost, not all the way, but almost makes me want to go listen to Travis Kelce's
podcast. Almost. All right, my man, we'll talk to you again.
All right, sounds good, man. It was fun.
That, of course, is David Cobb. If you missed anything, be up on the podcast shortly after the program ends. For Dennis, for Cobb, this is Jeffrey saying thanks for listening. Keep listening. The Gabe Kuhn Show's coming up next.